Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I have a terrific guest with me to kick off the new year. This is the first Broadway Radio Show of 2023, and it is someone who you probably heard if you listened a couple weeks ago when I did my top 10 vocalist recordings for 2022. Mia Pinero was on the list with her Growing Up album, and Mia's with me today. Hi, Mia.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you on. And since the listeners have gotten a taste of what you sound like from the top 10 list from a couple weeks ago, I thought it'd be fun for them to know more about you. We can also listen to a few more tracks from the album. But as we get started, let's fill them in on where you grew up and how you got first into singing and performing.
Yeah. So I'm from Racine, Wisconsin, which normally my Wisconsin accent doesn't come out until I say Wisconsin. but I'm born and raised in the Midwest. Actually, the cover of the album was taken on my hometown property. We were in a house kind of... It was near in the suburbs, but also in the middle of the woods. And there was this pond, which is where the album cover is taken. But I was born and raised there. I went to school there and I started singing, I think, from a really young age. I think my mom said I was 3 and I was starting to sing along to Disney movies. And I remember being really shy. So I wasn't. Which is funny now to think that, you know, now I'm a performer and but at the time I was always hiding behind my parents and my older siblings, but we also, my grandmother would have myself and my other 3 siblings sing a lot of old golden age musical theater songs. And we would all be dressed the same, kind of like the Von Trapp kids, thinking about. But we would sing whenever my parents would come home to pick us up from us staying over at her house. And so music was always around, especially musical theater, and always watching Disney movies. And so I started singing really from that. And I remember the first time I saw a stage production. I don't even know what it was, but it was very 42nd Street style, very New York jazz era. And I just turned to my mom and was like, oh my gosh, I want to do that. I want to be in a star show, because the curtains on the show had these stars on them. And I don't remember what it was, but I just remember being so infatuated with it and loved it and didn't really think it was going to be a career path. I think I just enjoyed it and sang a lot until I was in my first musical in 7th grade, Dear Edwina Jr.
Oh,
I was cast as Edwina. And I think ever since then, I just was obsessed. How do I do more of this? Joined the choir and every play and musical I could possibly do and just was obsessed.
And that's you're a perfect example of why I always tell people with kids, especially shy kids, that theater, whether it's musical theater or just theater in general, is such a great place to have kids go, especially if they are shy. Because I was the same. I was a shy kid and made my stage debut at 8 years old. And there was no stopping after that. It's because you're able to inhabit a totally different character than yourself, and you can be yourself up on stage, and being outgoing and being around people who encourage it is great, especially for kids who are shy, and you get so much support.
Definitely. And I think it allows you to express yourself in a safe environment. You can experience all the ranges of emotions and be able to, I always thought I can express myself and people will get something from it. And that was always, I remember my first drama class, my real drama class in 6th grade, I did a monologue and it was a very dramatic piece. And I really connected to it. And the response from people, not only did it feel amazing to perform, but the response after that, that kind of symbiotic relationship with the audience and the performer, I just wanted to do more and more. And same with singing. I watched the Phantom of the Opera movie when I was, I don't remember if it came out when I was in middle school, and the Christine had really curly brown hair. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to sing like this woman. And she had this beautiful high soprano. And I started singing in my basement all of the Phantom of the Opera songs and recording myself and playing it back and trying to mimic the sounds I was hearing, which I laugh because I was like, I think those were my early quote unquote voice lessons until my dad heard me in the basement. I was like, okay, we actually have to put you in some voice lessons. But it just, it was a very private for me type of art in the beginning. It was singing in my basement, singing in the garage. I would walk around my neighborhood singing in the road when there was no one around. And my sisters said that they could sometimes hear me, but I tried to get away and practice. And during the pandemic, I actually felt like I got to return to that small, you know, that smaller space of doing it really myself.
Right. And you eventually get to New York, obviously, and you make your Broadway debut in the revival of West Side Story. It opened in early 2020. So I think the listeners can see where this is going. You were the Maria understudy for the Ivan von Hove revival. And then, of course, pandemic shut everything down and you ended up going back to your hometown. To kind of wait out the pandemic with your mom. And one of the things that, you know, I've interviewed so many people on the show who have we've talked about, you know, how they got through the pandemic. And the one thing that if there's anything positive that's come out of it, it's really shown me and shown a lot of people that the creative impulses and urges of performers, especially theater performers, we're just not going to be suppressed, even when in the middle of a pandemic. And people found such creative, fulfilling ways to express themselves, whether it was doing Zoom concerts or writing books or writing songs, or in your case, recording an album. Everybody needed an outlet and they needed a way. And there was also, it was not only a really fertile time period for people to create, but the stuff that they were creating was being kind of infused with this sort of self-introspection that people were doing as part of the pandemic, because we were all kind of locked down and stuck either alone or with a very small circle of friends. And people were really, you know, kind of reevaluating their lives and who they were. And I think that comes out a lot in a lot of the things we've seen come from the pandemic, including your album, right?
Definitely. I couldn't agree more with you. I think it was such a collective, traumatic, but fascinating time period, because here we were. And I mean, it just makes me think, yeah, we had just opened West Side Story. I think we opened it early March and had just gone through this preview process. I'm so thankful I got the chance to go on. I think it was 9 times before we closed. And then boom, we got the notice when we were in the middle of understudy rehearsal. And I packed a bag thinking I was going to be gone for a few weeks. We'd be back in April, mid-April. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't gone home to see my family in a while. And I thought, this is a great opportunity to go home. And what turned into, you know, March to April, we went back to get the rest of our stuff in May and stayed there for a year and 2 months. I stayed with my mom for 9 of those months and my fiance lived down the street. But it was... I think at first there was obviously this fear of, and we all collectively were experiencing that, this fear of not wanting to catch it. What is this? How long are we going to be in this? But then there's that, you know, people are posting the bread making videos and they're, you know, in their PJs. And there was this really bizarre but interesting moment for all of us. But I think as it dragged on, I was starting to have this realization or fear of, will theater ever come back? My passion, what I have devoted my life to, is this going to be possible? And theater requires a live audience, as we all know. And I think I just had many nights where I was terrified, but also this has to come back in some capacity. This can't be it. And I think that lasted for a while, just this uncertainty. And for a little while, since I was performing so routinely, I didn't sing. I didn't, you know, I was eating cheese and drinking wine and not thinking of, you know, kind of having this break. But then I got, of course, out of practice and hadn't performed in a while and just felt a longing for that. But how was I going to do it? How could, there was no show rehearsal. I couldn't, I could sing for my mom. I could sing on the balcony with her, but that's where it sort of began. Was I went back to the garage downstairs and started singing through those Broadway karaoke tracks mm-hmm. on YouTube that I used to sing to, and singing more in the shower. And I had always wanted to make an album, but was nervous, scared, not knowing how I should do it. I thought, oh, well, that's something you get approached by later. And I just thought, no, there's got to be a way I can do this. And maybe it's not going to be a symphony behind me. It's not going to be a high budget produced thing, but I want to figure out how to do this. And I think it was day by day by day by day, just wanting to make something. And it was really special to hold my own rehearsals with Alex Thompson, my co-producer. He's arranged the album. He played piano. He mixed and mastered. I mean, this is a unicorn of a person that I met when I was doing my first Equity gig, My Fair Lady in North Carolina, and called him up. And we had already done, he had done some arrangements for me. And I said, hey, I want to make an album, but I have no idea how. And he said, well, funny, I'm actually an engineer as well. And I do this, I make albums. And I didn't even realize that at the time, which was just sort of a magical collaboration and moment. And he held me accountable, because you have these ideas of, oh, I want to do this, but how? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, let's make it then. And I was like, but I don't know how, and how am I going to go about it? But it was such a rewarding experience, just the two of us over Zoom making this thing.
And it's, I got to tell people that even though it's a, even the simplest of albums is a lot of work. And it's, as you, as I know, you've got, oh, we have the licensing of the songs issues. We have, you know, the mixing, and we've got to, it's got to, you can't just record it in your closet and it's going to sound perfect. And talk a little bit about that whole process, because I think, didn't you, I think I read somewhere that you sort of already had an idea of what songs you wanted to use, right?
Yeah. So initially I'd always been fascinated, which maybe that album will come someday, by simple little things. You know, I love mm-hmm. Rodgers and Hart, and like Blue Room, for example. That song is just so simple, about two people in a simple little room. And, but the feelings are so profound. And I was so obsessed with that idea. And at first I thought that was the direction I wanted to go in. But as I started listing, I keep a, it's called Inspiration Train. It's a note on my iPhone that just has all of these songs and ideas and concepts. And I had each of these songs on there, but they didn't really come together until, I swear it was in the middle of the night. This is when things come to me, I guess. It was in January of 2020 when I just thought, I think I need to make an album about what I'm going through, experiencing, reflecting, because during the pandemic, I was reconnected to obviously my hometown, but also my story of growing up and going to therapy and self-reflecting. Like you said, so many of us had the time to get off our treadmill and really figure out or explore our lives, what has happened, what we want. And so this album kind of emerged as something, well, I think I need to go internal into what I'm experiencing now and what makes this moment unique and special. And it kind of fell into place. The set list really did fall into place. And each of these songs have meant a lot to me. And of course, you know, there's the Children Will Listen, Known as Alone medley that I, you know, took some time to grab some of the lyrics that really have always been so important to me, or just have really touched me. And how can I create them in a new medley that this has been done a million times? And then there was like a Chance the Rapper bit, the Do You Remember is a little melody from a Chance the Rapper song that I wanted to connect to a Sondheim song. So it was kind of like this mixtape that started forming, which is again why working with Alex was wonderful, because he's worked with all these different musical styles and to make it sound as one piece. But no, I mean, I think it shows there's some Childish Gambino, there's Rodgers and Hart, there's Hadestown. These are all pieces that have really touched me and really reflected my own narrative in a way.
People make mistakes. Fathers, mothers, people make mistakes. Holding to their own, thinking they're alone. Careful the things you say, children will listen. Careful the things you do, children will see.
Couple things. One, as you said a few minutes ago, you knew that if since you were kind of doing this on your own, it wasn't going to be a large orchestra, heavily produced, big budget album. But I have to tell you, that's really the smarter way to go for someone who is a new singer that people don't know. And one of the reasons I've been recommending your album to so many people is it's a great introduction to you and your voice because it's simple. And it showcases your vocals much more so than you backed by a big orchestra. Then you're competing with an orchestra, and here you're not. Here the music and the instrument behind you is complementing your voice and really showing off your voice. So that's a really smart thing to do for a first album because it really shows what a singer you are.
Thank you so much. I mean, I appreciate that so deeply, and. I felt if there is an album that's going to be bare bones, let it be this one. This mm-hmm. one, again, the storytelling was the most important thing for me. And yeah, the just singing to the piano, it being more stripped down, there's nowhere to hide. It's very, right. I wanted it to sound like that. Even the nearness of you when we were mixing it, I said, I want it to sound like you're right there on someone's pillow and you're nearer. That's what it's talking about. And I wanted to have that feeling. And there were some little crackles and you can hear me swallow or whatever. Like you can hear all these little things. And I wanted that because this album explores some, you know, and the backstory of each song is for my cabarets and for, you know, and some of things I don't even need to share, but there's a lot of my heart, soul, and experience in these songs. And that's what I really wanted to come through. And so thank you so much. That really means the world to me.
Right. And as I tell people over and over and over again, the listeners get sick of me saying this. When you sit down to listen to Mia's album or any album, please dedicate the time to sit down and listen to it in one sitting from beginning to end, because Mia and all these other artists are taking you on a journey. They're telling you a story. The songs are in a specific order because there is a narrative flow or a thematic flow that you need to experience all at once. And I know it's tempting to go on Spotify or any of the streaming services and look at the songs and go, oh, I know that song. I'm going to play that one. And then you're picking one song out of the album and you're not getting the feel of the album. And it's also, you know, you could have almost titled this album Meeting Mia, because it is really meeting Mia Pinero. It's meeting you and learning about you through an album. And that's, you know, so I really encourage people to listen to it, but talk about kind of the thematic flow of the album.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for saying that. This is very much a narrative piece and it's supposed to be listened to, like you said, from beginning to end. And it begins with Stand Tall, which is a song that explores a relationship with a father figure, and it has this melancholic yet epic feeling to it. And my father really was very influential in encouraging me to go for my dreams. But there is also a melancholic feeling to that song, because in a way it's like work hard, stand tall, move forward. And it's like, what? There's something amazing about that. And there's also something about why you need to work so hard to go for a dream. Like, what are things that you're kind of, what am I trying to say? Like, what are things you're trying to hide from, let's say, in that dream that you're trying to not think about and you're trying to move forward to? And Stand Tall will be echoed later in the album. So that's just another, and I'll get to that song, but, so Stand Tall begins the album, and then it's followed by All I've Ever Known, which, you know, begins with someone talking about, I've been alone in my life, or I've felt that I have to stand tall on my own. So it comes off of Stand Tall. And my parents had a really bad divorce when I was growing up. And, you know, we all have our childhood stuff, but I was in a space when I was in high school that I was really searching for a way to express what I was experiencing and to really process it in my own way at the time. And all I've ever known is then when you meet someone and they slowly like break down your walls brick by brick. And that's my fiance. And we got engaged in 2021, which is when the album was released. And he slowly broke down those walls. And that comes into the nearness of you and your nearer, which I think are such beautifully written songs of that close intimacy of being, and which we didn't get to really have during the pandemic, which is something else that I was really wanting to connect to, is just this cheek to cheek, just vulnerability with another person. And so that kind of is this first section, shall I say, to then lead into Stop This Train, that was always a song that made me emotional, because here you go off to New York or wherever you're going to go, you pursue your dream, you leave your family behind in a way. Yes, you have FaceTime and you can call them, but it's when you return and you realize things are changing. We are all changing and we can't be there for all of these moments. And Stop This Train to me is, let's halt. Why can't we just stop time? But we can't. Really. But the pandemic felt in a way like that stopping of time. And I just would be so like bawling when I would leave home at the holidays and go back to school, or just this homesickness of I wish I could have this dream and my family near me. And that was always really challenging for me in my process of growing up. So that felt like the pillar between the two sections of the album. And then I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face is probably one of my favorite songs on the album, one of the most important. I got to do my Fair Lady, as I said earlier in the episode, as my first regional job, my equity card. It was my dream role. I would love to do it again. It's such a fantastic show. And I was always a little jealous of Higgins to get to sing this, again, beautifully intimate song about how someone day by day has affected you in ways you don't even realize. And so I go home. I got to spend 9 months with my mom. And that was, as I've said in other interviews, but that was the first time I got to spend that length of time with her since I was a 9-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. And it was, we were doing arts and crafts like we used to when I was younger. And we were spending this time that we didn't really get to have when I was growing up. And that song really had to be in that positioning, as you said, on the album, because it was, you know, you go through all of this, you do the move, but then you come back to this moment of this relationship, this key relationship I'm getting to, I don't know, I'm getting to have back. And she, I make jokes too, that she literally whistles Night and Noon. So that lyric is right. And I had to change some lyrics on that one. Cause Higgins is not, as kind. So I had to change a couple for the album, which licensing was also interesting. But so that song is really important. And then there's an echo of Stand Tall, if listeners want to hear, in that song, because that's part of, so I went for this big dream. I stood tall. I dreamed, but I didn't have my mom with me. And that's why there's that Stand Tall little exit music that then culminates at the ding of Children Will Listen. That's how it starts the song, ends a chord, starts on the same chord with Children Will Listen, and is basically a song that has always, again, deeply connected with me, but it's be aware of what you tell children and how narratives can really shape their lives, and how things in my life had really shaped my growing up. And then you come to realize things as an adult. And that's just Sondheim so brilliantly wrote that piece to then, what do we do with all of this stuff, this journey? We have the, do you remember Chance the Rapper bit that's, you know, remember growing up? Do you remember those moments, those sweet moments of growing up? And now what do we do with it all? Which is Sondheim's, now it's time to start growing up.
No, I'm not colorblind. I know the world is black and white. Trying to keep an open mind, but I just can't sleep on this tonight. Stop this train. I wanna get off and go home. Again, I can't take the speed it's moving in. I know I can't, but honestly, won't someone stop this train? Don't know how else to say it. Don't want to see my parents go. Generations length away from fighting life out on my own. Stop this train. I wanna get off and go home again. I can't take the speed it's moving in. I know I can't, but honestly, won't someone stop this train? Thank you. find a way to say that life has just begun. Had a talk with my old man, said help me understand. He said turn 68, you renegotiate. Don't stop this train and don't for a minute change the place you're in. And don't think I couldn't ever understand. I tried my hand, but now I see we'll never stop this train. Once in a while when it's good, it'll feel like it should, and we're all still around, and it's still safe and sound, and you don't miss a thing. Do you cry when you're driving away in the dark? Singing, stop this train, I wanna get off and go home again. I can't take the speed, it's moving in. I know I can't, but now I see we'll never stop this train.
That was probably way more of a explanation than
no, it's perfect.
Wanted.
It's perfect because it really does take listeners through the journey. And as I think you kind of slightly mentioned, it's a perfect cabaret show. And I'm assuming that you will be doing the album and probably with a few more songs, but expanding it into some sort of like a song cycle almost. It really fits for you.
Thank you. I did it on the release date. I did my 54 Below solo debut with just the album, which was quite short. So it needs to be expanded, but it was doing the album in concert on the date of the release. And that was so emotional and incredible and vulnerable. And I thank you so much for saying that. I would love to do it again. And it's definitely a bit of me in that. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to leave listeners with which again, licensing was interesting. I wanted there to be a medley of the Chance the Rapper with the Sondheim put together, but they said, that'll be $3,000. And I said, well, I can't afford that. So you made a couple adjustments, which the very, very end of the entire album was supposed to be a Chance the Rapper lyric, which was like, days disappear into months, into years, hold that feeling forever, which is the little lyric tune of that one, which was going to end it on this nostalgic note. But instead, I had to, and actually like better, using Sondheim's lyrics, the so old friends, now it's time to start. Instead of saying start growing up, I'm just telling the audience, it's time for you to start your journey of what do you remember? How are we still growing? And I'm pleased, even though it was a sad moment when they said this, my initial vision wasn't going to work. I think it ended up being more special.
So old friends, now it's time to start growing up. Taking charge, seeing things as they are. Facing facts, not escaping them, still with dreams, just reshaping them, growing up. So old friends, don't you see we can have it all? Moving on, getting out of the past. Solving dreams, not just trusting them, taking dreams, readjusting. Growing up, do you remember growing up? Do you remember growing up? Sold friends, now it's time to start.
It's a terrific way to end the album. It really is. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, because once the pandemic was over, or sort of, I want to say it's over, but sort of getting into a little bit into the rearview mirror. I know that you kind of got back on stage in 2021. You did Songs for a New World at Paper Mill Playhouse, which was a fantastic cast. I looked at it and looked at some of the videos. That must have been, I mean, first off, a lot of people have talked to me about their experience about getting back up on stage after the pandemic and how overwhelming and emotional and thrilling it was for everybody.
Oh, definitely. I think it was even hearing piano during the pandemic, a recorded rehearsal. I think there was that Godspell up in upstate. And I remember hearing the rehearsal piano and I think I started crying just because and applause. So being in a rehearsal space, first of all, doing a completely sung through, very hard show. We're all in masks. We're all separated, but we are doing this show about new beginnings. Songs for a New World is a lot about, at least Woman One sings so much about a new world opening up. And when I'll never forget, I was standing backstage, you know, she starts that opening number, my back is to the audience, the curtains closed, and on the announcement, it said, live theater is back. And you just hear all this uproar of applause. And I just was so overwhelmed with gratitude to be in that space, to be able to perform again. And that production was so exciting. It was a little scary at moments because you're like, whoa, my body is not used to being under lights and in front of an audience. This is, you know, it just was so surreal. But I'm so it was an incredible cast and such a surreal experience. And you could tell audiences just craved so badly to be back. Right. And that was amazing. And then I got to do two comedic plays. That was so fun to bring.
And we're gonna talk about one of those in a minute because I want to get to 2022 because 2022 was a big year for you in a lot of ways. A lot of things happened, and first off, in January of 2022, a landmark, an absolute for your bio, an absolute landmark. You know where I'm going with this. You made your television debut on Law and Order SVU in January of 2022, and you now can put. You have a Law and Order credit for your Playbill bio.
I was like, I've officially made it.
It's so funny
because even Broadway, it's like, oh, that's awesome, but Law and Order. And I went home this last Christmas and I had some extended family just be like, man, that was so cool, you know, seeing you on Law and Order. And, you know, it was a small part, but it was awesome. I got to film with Ice-T and Jason Biggs and it was really a fun experience. And it was my first time on a real television set. And so that was really fun. And it was a great way to start off 2022 with, you know, getting that checked off the bucket.
Right. Exactly. That's every New York theater performer's checkbox. You got to get an SVU appearance on there. And you did that. And then of course the album came out right after that and you did your 54 Below concert. And then in the fall, this last fall, you went down to Houston, Texas to the Alley Theater to do Lend Me a Soprano. So tell people about Lend Me a Soprano. I saw Lend Me a Tenor on Broadway in its original production by Ken Ludwig. It's a hysterical play. I mean, Ken is such a fantastic writer when it comes to comedy and farce. And this is
comedic playwright.
There's nobody. And I was kind of fascinated by the concept that he took Lend Me a Tenor and did a bit of a gender switch rewrite so that it is now a soprano rather than a tenor. So it can be two women playing the main roles. And talk a little bit about doing that because farce, especially a comedy like this, people don't understand. People think, oh my goodness, the big heavy dramatic plays are so hard on actors. Comedy, I think, is harder.
I agree 1,000%.
This is so much harder. And it's farce, which is even more taxing on an actor. So talk about the experience.
Oh my gosh. And you'll have to stop me because I could literally talk for days about Lend Me a Soprano. It was one of the most incredible theatrical experiences of my life. It was, first of all, fascinating because Alexandra Silver, who played the Tito role in our show, is Elena Ferenczi. She was a mentor figure of mine, and I always loved her work. And she came into the Green Room 42, where I was waitressing, because it was like a singing waitress job. And I told her, I said, I have to tell you, you're one of my favorite performers. I think you're so incredible, blah, 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 blah. We take a photo. I find out she does mentoring sessions. I sign up for a session, and we kind of are connected but again, I idolized her, loved her. We find out we are in Lend Me a Soprano together, and she is the Tito role that mentors the Max role. So my role was Joe. And we freaked out right before we went to rehearsals. And it was such a magical experience. I love Lend Me a Tenor. I rewatched it at the archives before I went down and just thought, this is going to be hard. Like you said, I'd never done a farce. I had done my first comedic play earlier in the year. I did Yoga Play at Playmakers Repertory Company. And so I was a little intimidated, but Jo is quite an anxious character herself. And it was, I knew I could feed a lot of that energy into that. And it was it was remarkable. We had such an incredible cast, and Ken was so generous and was there doing rewrites. And we actually, there's the teaching scene is hilarious, but in our production, not only is it funny, it becomes this moment of women uplifting women, where Al's character kind of passes the torch to Jo and teaches her why we sing and why it's important. And it really just hit this emotional chord in people. And there's something about it being women that I'm biased, but I think the production is fresh. It's in ways funnier and it's deeper, because there's a lot of, there's some real vulnerabilities that Jo experiences. And then Elena being a woman at this point in her career and wanting to continue to be taken seriously. And then of course, all this, the sexy moments in act two are now more women empowerment. And so it really does change the production, but you have basically the same show, a lot of the same lines, and even the male characters, the Leo character, I forget the name in the original. The Maggie character is now, all the names, I'm going to be getting confused, but basically it's really, really fun. And it was so incredible, but exhausting. Mm-hmm. We were running some of those bits over and over and over, because you just need such precision to land the laughs. And Ken was there with us through previews and through opening and gave us a blessing, and just really was a really generous collaborator. And Eleanor Holdridge, our director, couldn't work with a sweeter, better director. And so, yeah, I could literally talk all day about it. I pray it has a life. I pray people can see this. It's such, we need comedy so badly. Mm-hmm. And I, like you said, the drama, I've always been a drama girl. I was, you know, West Side Story was my golden ticket in a way, that I knew how to do that deep drama with The Soprano. And I kind of always thought drama is my thing, but finding comedy and what it gives to people has been such a joy of 2022, really. And I really hope we see it in New York or somewhere at some point, because like I said, I think we need it.
And I think what people don't understand is one of the joys that I think actors get out of playing comedy is the feedback from the audience. Because part of being a performer is, it is the connection with the audience. And when you're doing a drama, you, in an ideal situation, in dramatic moments, you want silence. So you do not want to hear the audience. But in a comedy, you're it's all about the laughs. You'd want to know that the audience is laughing and getting the jokes and enjoying it. And that becomes the feedback that keeps the energy going on stage. And it's a much more symbiotic relationship between an audience and an actor in a comedy than it is in a drama. So
it's electric. And and when we had a student matinee, it was one of the best shows I've ever done. It was in the sense of energy. It was like a sports game. Just laughs. And then also at moments of the show, there's some real, Joe just collapses on the floor and is like, I'm a nobody. And you heard people go, oh, you heard, because I think they're so used to laughing and having mm-hmm. that experience that they feel safe to respond in other ways. So I agree. You know that they're with you. You remember you're in the theater. It feels alive. It really, I've never had an experience like that. And I will cherish it forever. And again, our cast was filled with the most talented, lovely people in the world. So I couldn't agree more. It's really, really special. And like I said, a lot of work. Ken calls his plays muscular comedies. And I was running around and martini glasses and throwing poofs. And it just was crazy. Props heaven, which I love. I love a prop. All my self tapes will have props in them. But it's really special.
So we are now in the new year. We're now in 2023. So what does the year hold for Mia Pinheiro? What's coming up?
So I'm actually super excited. I can't actually say because it hasn't been announced yet, but I will be heading back to Broadway this year, which I'm
okay. Well, you can tell me off. You can tell me when we stop recording.
Yeah,
my lips will be sealed. I should keep notes or recordings of all the conversations that happen after we stop recording the show.
Oh, like extra,
all the extra dirt and all this that people like. Oh, this is something I couldn't tell you on the show. Anyway, so yes, we're looking forward to. Is it going to be this season?
This season. We begin rehearsals very soon. So if you keep posted on my social medias and my website, it'll be announced very, very soon, but I don't want to announce too early, but I'm very excited about it. I'm so thankful making my Broadway debut and then it just being cut off right away was really challenging, but I think it was good to realize, okay, Broadway is just a street. Of course, it's super special, but I got to go back and do, you know, regional plays and a world premiere and work on my own stuff. And it reminded me there's so many ways in which we can be artists that is just as important. Mm-hmm. But coming back to Broadway is, of course, just such a special thing in this year. And I'm also going to be getting married this year to the love of my life in May. So it's going to be a really exciting year. And one of the things I'm trying to focus on is to be really present and get lots of rest because it will be.
And then hopefully we will get some initial work done on actually getting you a big budget orchestral album.
Yes. If anyone
wants to finance that,
donate and finance. I have many album concepts that I can pitch, but no, that I kept saying throughout to Alex, my collaborator, someday I'll have the big dress and the big orchestra, but we are working on it, which again, I think I couldn't be more proud of it. And the integrity of this album and collaborating, like I said, with just one of the most incredible talents, Alex Thompson. Again, I keep plugging his name because he's really special. And but I'm down for a nice, big, splashy album. So someday.
And where can people find you? You have a webpage, so I'm going to direct people there people can find you.
MiaPinheiro.com, and I have an Instagram that's Mia Pinheiro, Twitter Mia Pinheiro, Facebook Mia Pinheiro. They're all just my first and last name, and I try to keep everything regularly updated so you can see concerts that I'm going to be. I do have a concert coming up in January in Long Island. I believe it's on the 21st, and another one on February 6th. So I'll be I'll be updating through there. And then you can also see me on the Broadway in 2023.
On the Broadway. Yes,
on the Broadway.
Yes. We will see a lot of Mia in the future. And in the meantime, until then, I want people to check out Growing Up, which is Mia's debut album, which, as I said, was one of the top 10 vocalist recordings for 2022 on my show a couple weeks ago. And I was thrilled to have you. Thank you so much for taking the time, Mia.
Oh, gosh. Thank you for having me. This was such a joy.
You're nearer than my head is to my willow, dearer than I love.